I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me. I might have been slightly more grateful had it been scheduled and pushed back a couple hours, but this is more than I could have hoped for. I think in a lot of ways this wouldn't have happened without, even though I've had no prior connection, I'd like to say thanks to Alan Knutson, since in a lot of ways this wouldn't have happened without him. First, I want to describe a way of parameterizing the moduli space of stable principal bundles of a Riemann surface. But first, to give a heuristic for this, I'll sort of describe a way of doing it for the moduli space of vector bundles. So X will be a compact Riemann surface. Genus G. And then the original Chern parameterization considers vector bundles V of degree NG in rank N that fit into an exact sequence of the form of this form. Where the quotient is torsion. So in this situation, V will have n global sections coming from the map from the trivial bundle. And generically, these will be linearly independent. And at ng points, there will be a relation between the values of the sections at those points, and this will have a kernel, and the generic situation is that it'll be a one-dimensional kernel, and so we get the kernel determines a point in a CPN minus one, and the point itself gives us another parameter, so this is n minus one parameters. And the point itself gives us another parameter. So we get n parameters at each of these points. So what we're looking at is a space. It's a symmetric product of x for the points in the curve and then the CPN minus 1. But if we quotient out by the automorphisms of the projective space, then we have a PGLN here that we'd like to quotient out by. So our total parameter space has n times ng parameters up here, and then we're quotienting out by PGLN. So this is minus n squared minus 1, which is n squared times g minus 1 plus 1. And this is the dimension of the moduli space of rank n bundles. And in this case, the degree is ng. So dually, we can turn this around and fix a vector bundle W and consider V for which there exists a sequence 0 into W where the quotient is torsion. So here we're fixing the trivial bundle, and here we're going to let W be arbitrary for now. So the map here, T, is an isomorphism away from a finite set of points. So I'll just call this a divisor. This will be some reduced divisor E. So it's just a finite set of points. And so I'll let x naught be the complement of these points. And x1 will be a disjoint union of disks centered at the at the points in the support of E. So this will be a, so since any bundle can be trivialized on any non-compact Riemann surface, we can use this open cover as a trivialization and consider the transition functions. So if G01 and H01 are the transition functions for V and W respectively, then G01 is H01 times tau for some and this is tau will be the matrix in of T with respect to those trivializations. So tau is a map from X1 into matrices. So now since we're fixing W, by, we can vary the transition function for V and hence V by varying the matrix tau. So this gives us a way of moving within the moduli space just by playing with the matrix. So so we're considering, but in the case where tau is GLN valued on all of X1, what this amounts to is just changing the trivialization of the same bundle. So really we're taking maps into the matrices from X1, which are GLN valued on the punctured disks, and quotienting out by the GLN valued functions on the full disk. So we're considering again, just for notation, X01 will just be the intersection. And we're quotienting by maps from the full disk into GLN. So this is essentially the loop group associated to GLN, and this is essentially the positive loop group. So the quotient is and the affine Grassmannian. Yeah. So in the case where X, we have a single disk here. So I guess this is a multi loop group. So just to be a bit concrete, in case the determinant of tau vanishes to order 1, generically it will look like something like this. So here you can see that we get this is where the so doing column operations, since we can multiply on the right by invertible matrices, we can do column operations and reduce it to something that looks like this. So you see that the n minus 1 parameters comes up here, and then the extra parameter comes where the at the vanishing of the coordinate. So this is, you can sort of see explicitly where the parameters come in. So now if we consider the infinitesimal theory, we want to consider, for deformation, we want to deform the map from V to W. So this is essentially our section. I mean this is actually where the deformations from the family that we're constructing come from. So we're considering, so deformations of the map T from V into W are really sections of V star tensor W. But since we want to quotient out by, we're quotienting out by right multiplication of matrices, so this corresponds to, so we want to consider V star tensor W modulo V star tensor V, which is V star tensor W mod V. And from our original sequence, we can tensor this with V star, and we get this. So in the long exact sequence, is this legible? I guess it is. So in the long exact sequence, we'll have a map. Yeah, so just like you're suggesting, the sections here really live in the above those points. Since this is torsion, these sections live above those points, and this is a finite dimensional space. And those actually give the infinitesimal deformations of the family if we sort of construct a family just by choosing the T's in those matrices. So we get a map in the long exact sequence like this. And this is actually the Kodaira-Spencer map for that family. And if you set up W appropriately and then choose your points generically, you actually do get the right number of parameters again. Okay, so the question, I mean, part of the motivation for this is to, using this, one can consider either Hitchin pairs of a bundle and a Higgs field or pairs of a bundle and a connection, and consider the isospectral or isomonodromy flows. And this gives a way of, so these are Hamiltonian systems, and one can get explicit expressions for these Hamiltonians, for the Hamiltonians in those cases. So what I'd like to do is sort of do the same thing for principal bundles over Riemann surfaces. So so we want to essentially play the same game and consider we want to fix a principal bundle Q, say with transition function H01. And consider the T's with transition function G01, which is just gotten by, and you'll put a sigma here, where sigma is some map from the union of puncture disks into the group. So in the case we had before, what we're using somehow is that GLN is a dense open subset of the n by n matrices. So what we want to look for is something in which G is embedded as a dense open subset, and just sort of have a map into there that when on the puncture disks is group valued, but somehow falls out of the group at the support of the divisor. So this is where the usefulness of a compactification comes from. So in the case where G is semi-simple, of adjoint type, there's something known as the wonderful or De Concini-Pochesi compactification. I keep getting asked, and this is not my term, but, and you can actually search for this and find something. But, I mean, in this case, it helps. So, I'll give a quick description and some properties of it. Okay, so we'll assume that G is of this type, and I'll just describe how you construct it. So, let G be the universal cover of G, and then V regular irreducible representation of G tilde. So regular just means that when you write the highest weight in terms of the fundamental weights, all of the fundamental weights appear. So, I mean, you can just say that the Weyl group acts without stabilizer on the highest weight. and then we have an embedding of G tilde into the automorphism of V. And so for an element in our group, we lift to an element of the universal cover and consider the image in the projectivization of the endomorphism of V. So this gives a well-defined map. I mean, it's really embedding of G into the projectivization of the endomorphisms of V. And so to get a compactification, we can take the closure. So we set G bar to be the closure in here. The first thing that you'd like to see is that this is independent of the choice of V. Two is that G bar carries a G cross G action for which there are to the L orbits, where L is the rank of the group. Okay, so the action is just, I mean, here we're really working with matrices, and the action is just left and right multiplication. And it's well defined just because when you lift, things in the center act trivially in the projectivization. So we really are just working with matrices over here. I mean, this is sort of analogous in the situation where you have where GLN acts on the set of n by n matrices by left and right multiplication. There's also, I mean, the orbits are labeled by the rank. So you also do have a finite number of orbits in that. So there's a bit of an analogy. So these orbits can be labeled subsets of the set of simple roots. So, alternatively, this is just the conjugacy classes of parabolics containing a fixed Borel, or containing a fixed Borel. So this choice fixes a Borel subgroup, and these are unipotent radicals of the corresponding Borels. Another thing that's nice to know is that this has an open affine set of the form, subset of the form U minus cross Z cross U plus, where these are the same U's, and there's an isomorphism F from CL into Z, such that F of C star to the L is actually the maximal torus. And there's a correspondence. So this is actually parametrized by the simple roots. So F of 1 over, so if T is in the maximal torus, F of over 1 over alpha of T, which you can recover T by. And actually, if we take these elements, where the epsilon I are either 0 or 1, this gives a set of orbit representatives. And so when they're all 1 is when you're in the open orbit, which is the group itself. So, if G is PGL2, it's smooth. Actually, there's more to say here. Where one of these is zero, you get a hypersurface, and these actually intersect. They intersect with normal crossing, and the intersections are the closures of the orbits. So we're dealing with adjoint types here. So in the case of the A family of groups, the smallest one is PGL2. In this case, G tilde is SL2, and the smallest the standard representation is regular. I mean, there's only one simple group. So the map, the usual map of PGL2 into a projectivization of 2x2 matrices is the psi above in the construction. This is a projectivization of, so this is essentially a P3, since this is a four-dimensional space, and this is a three-dimensional group, so the closure has to be all of P3. So we have a PGL2 bar equal to So the next smallest group is PGL3. And the smallest regular representation is the adjoint representation, which is eight-dimensional. So the endomorphisms are 64-dimensional. So to actually write out what the compactification is, it's a bit of a mess, since you're looking for an eight-dimensional space in a P63. So I haven't done that. I can't really describe it to you, but... So the examples are sort of difficult to write down. So now I'll try to use this for to go back to this parametrization problem. So again, we fix principal bundle Q with transition function H01. Through all this, we've sort of fixed the set of points on the Riemann surface and the corresponding transition function. So we want to consider. We'll also now fix a map sigma from the union of punctured disks into the compactification, such that sigma on the punctured disks is group valued, and then let G01 just be H01 times sigma. And G01 determines a principal bundle P. Okay. So in the vector bundle case, what we could do is consider the map of sections of the vector bundle we constructed from the fixed bundle. For principal bundles, we don't really have sections in that sense. So what we can do is the following. We let Q bar be the bundle associated to Q with fiber G bar. And remember that this carries an action on the left and on the right. So by the lambda, I mean we form this bundle using the left action. So essentially what we're doing is compactifying the fibers of the bundle here. So since we had two actions here and we used one to form the associated bundle, we still have the one left over. So this still has a right action. And actually Q sits inside this, and it's actually the same action. Furthermore, the sigma gives us a map from sigma. We can define a map from P into Q bar, which will be an isomorphism away from the support of the divisor E. And at those points, this essentially collapses the fiber of P into the orbit of the G bar, where sigma lies at those points. Sigma takes a value at those points.
So you're going to
Q bar. Thanks. So these are both. Remember that these are both. This is a map over X. So these are both bundles over x. So they have vertical tangent bundles. So just concretely. And under the differential of this map, the tangent vertical tangent vectors go to vertical tangent vectors. So we get we want a sort of bundles over P. So we'll pull this back to P. We can pull back VQ bar to P via S. And we get a map from VP, which is essentially the differential map of the map above, into this. And both of these vector bundles carry a G action for which this map is equivariant. So they descend to bundles over the Riemann surface. Quotienting by the G action, so we get so VP mod G. So this is the adjoint bundle corresponding to P, and then we get some bundle which I'll call EPQ, which is just a S star EQ bar over G. Okay, and remember that S was an isomorphism away from a finite set of points, and so this map is as well. So we get an exact sequence here where the last term is torsion. So it turns out that this is the exact analog of the sequence we had for vector bundles. This is the sequence is what we use to for the deformation theory. So by by choosing our sigma, or by by deforming the sigma, what we're doing is really deforming by something, by a section of this bundle. So in our so deformations now. Sigma from P into Q bar are sections of the last bundle and
when you say deformations of sigma, do you mean you're computing
tangent space? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I didn't. Yeah. So for this is a tangent space to the moduli space at V, and in this case, the adjoint bundle serves the same purpose. Right? So a deformation. So from this exact sequence, we get H0 of
E mod IP into H1 of IP. And this is the tangent space at P to the moduli space of G bundles. So in principle, we can do this. So the question, so the remaining problem is that for a parametrization, ideally you want the same number of parameters as the dimension of the space you're parametrizing. So to so we need a way of computing the number of parameters and sort of getting it right. So for vector bundles, we took twists of the form. So by a twist, I just mean these twists of the transition function at the various points. Z1. So essentially, these are Hecke modifications of the bundle supported at these points. So in our case, so we take twists of the form f of 1 z 1. So remember that f sort of parametrizes an open set in the closure of the maximal torus. So, I mean, the twist won't actually look like this, but it'll be sort of conjugate to this. So we want to put a bunch of these twists in at various points. But we still need to know which kind of twist and how many points. And this is not a fully answered question yet. But I'll sort of explain where it's at. So for such twists, we obtain this many parameters. Explain the notation in a second. So the choice of, if this is in the ith position, remember that this is this gives you the what you get when you plug in the ith simple root. This is the coordinate corresponding to the ith simple root. So the number of parameters you get one for each positive root space up to with the multiplicity which that simple root appears in that root. So, and then there's an extra one which corresponds to the location of the point which Z vanishes at. So we get this many parameters. So for a semi-simple group, G, the dimension of the moduli space, of principal bundles is the dimension of G times G minus 1. So say we start with Q being the trivial bundle, we will want dim G times the genus number of parameters, since we have to quotient out by automorphisms of Q bar, really. And this is this is actually just G, since automorphisms of a principal bundle are maps from the base into the group. And this is... Yeah. It's corresponding to the simple root. So the I's, it's the I-th position here corresponds to the I-th simple root of the root system. So that's what it is. So we need a G extra parameters, the dimension of the group extra parameters, since we're going to be quotienting out by a group of dimension of that dimension. So parameters. But in the simplest case, this doesn't actually work, or not all the time. So, I'll just give a couple quick examples and stop. So if G is PGL2, there's only one simple root, and it occurs with multiplicity 1 in that root. So we get two parameters for each twist. But here, the dimension of the group is 3. We need a 3G, though. So if G is odd, there might be a problem. And this is not yet resolved yet. But if G is, I think it's called PO5, so this is the adjoint group associated to the root system B2. So the dimension is 10, and we get either 4 or 5 parameters. Because there's two simple roots. If you choose the first one, you get, I think the first one might be 5 and the second one 4. And in this case, things will work. And I think it works for all the whole B family, and probably then for the C family. But I still need to iron things out. Anyways, this is where it's at, and I'll stop here.